All right, Rabosai, good morning. Let us begin. So I first want to begin by thanking the sponsors of this morning. Sure, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Sivan, to thank Justin and Abigail Rosemore for dedicating all the Shurim and Drushos this month in memory of their beloved son, Kobi Yaakov David Zichron Levracha Ben Yosef Tzadok, to thank our monthly sponsor, Alan and Sumairowitz and family, Jason, Deborah, Justin, Rebecca, Mindy, Simcha, and all of the grandchildren for dedicating the Shurim and Drushos this month in merit of a Refuah Shlema for Sue, Shulam Istova, Bas Mindel. We thank our DAF sponsor. We thank our DAF sponsor for this morning, Shmuel and Devorah Finkelstein, in honor of Shani Finkelstein's birthday. We thank all of our sponsors for their incredible generosity. We thank them again for their sponsorships, and in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshamas should have an aliyah. Those who require a refuah should, in Yerz Hashem, have one together with Kol Chol the Yisrael. And Halavai, we shall be zochah to celebrate many beautiful birthdays and milestones together for many years to come. And Abosi, with that, let us begin. So we have a beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Pei. And we are picking up on Pei 80. We're picking up actually last three words on Ayin Tes Amud Beis 79b. So the Gemara quotes the Mishnah saying, Dio Kedei Lichtov. So remember again, continuing in the Mishnah, which discusses the various amounts of different types of material that one is chayiv if they carry. Remember again, so we've already established that in order to be chayiv for Hotzah, one has to carry not just any amount, but rather again, a unit of chashivos, a unit of importance. So when it comes to dio, when it comes to ink, how much ink is considered to be chashiv? The amount necessary to write two letters. So says the Gemara, Tana, top of pay, 80a. Tana, shtei osios bidio, ushtei osios bekomos, shtei osios bekamun. So also, it says, interestingly enough, you are chayiv if you carry enough ink to write two letters. Now, this is true whether or not you have two letters worth of dio. Now, dio, Rashi points out, is dried ink. So if you have two letters worth of dried ink, or shtei osios bekumus, kumus means that the ink is in the quill, or shtei osios bekamarin. Kamarin is the ink well. So what it's pointing out is that you're chayiv for transporting a certain amount of ink. So whether that is dry ink, whether that is ink actually in the quill, or whether that is ink in the ink well, if one carries that particular amount, halacha lemaisa, one is chayiv for that on Shabbos. So by Rava. Rava asked the shayla, os achos bidio, os achas bekomos, os achas bekamrin mahu. What happens, Rabbi says, now we've established that halacha lemaisa on Shabbos, if you carry out on Shabbos the amount of ink to write two letters. So whether, again, you're carrying out that ink as dried ink, whether you're carrying it ink absorbed into the quill, or whether it's ink in the inkwell, one is chayiv for doing so. What happens, however, if halacha lemaisa, you have one letter's worth of ink, dried ink, one letter's worth of ink in the quill, or one letter's worth of ink in the quill, and one letter's worth of ink in the inkwell? So what happens under those circumstances? Do those amounts of ink combine to form the shear of liability or not? To which the Gemara says, teku. To which the Gemara says, good kasha, but the truth is we're not sure about the answer of that. Okay. Amarela, hotzi shtei osios v'kasem kishum halich, chayiv. We'll see an interesting case. What happens if halacha lemaisa, one goes ahead and carried out two letters worth of ink, and he wrote the letters as he was walking? Kishum halach. Look at Rashi. Shelo amod lafush that they have hanachas gufo hanacha. Afilo haki chayiv deikar hanachas dialak safus. So we'll say, listen to this interesting case. So let's say Reuven's walking. He's carrying out two letters worth of ink. So remember again, I will say, any time that we talk about Hotzah, whenever we talk about the concept of carrying or transporting something on Shabbos, one is only chayiv if one does an akira and a hanacha, right? One must uproot the item in one domain and place it down to rest in another domain. So the act of carrying something by itself will not generate liability, unless, of course, one is carrying Dalet Amos and Rosh Hashanah, but even then, one requires akira and a hanacha. See, here's the interesting case. Let's say one is carrying two letters worth of ink. And what he does is, imagine this case, he does is, let's say he writes the two letters on his garment, but he never stopped walking. So that's what it is. Hotzi shtei osios, v'kasvan kishu mahalech. So he carried out two letters worth of ink. He wrote it down as he was walking. So there was never really a formal hanocha. There was never a formal time coming to rest. So what's the halacha? Chayiv, he's still chayiv. Why? Ksivasan zohi hanichasan. Because we'll say at the end of the day, halacha lemaisa, the act of writing, remember when you write something, the ink itself comes to rest on a surface. When the ink comes to rest on a surface, that is the hanocha. That is the rest. That is the placement of the ink. So what's interesting is as follows, that ultimately, again, we view it that the ink has come to rest on the surface upon which it has been written. And therefore, one is chayiv. Va'amar Rava, hotzi os achas v'kasva. V'chazreva hotzi os achas v'kasva pater. Listen to the interesting case. Rava says, what happens if one goes ahead and takes out enough ink for one letter? So let's just imagine the scene. So Reuven goes ahead, takes out enough ink for one letter, and he writes it down. So hotzi os achas v'kasva. V'chazreva hotzi os achas v'kasva. So we'll say, so instead of going ahead and halacha lemaisa taking out enough ink for two letters and writing them down, in this case, Reuven takes out enough ink for one letter, writes it down, then goes back and transports another letter's worth of ink and writes it down. So what's the halacha? Pater. In this case, ultimately, again, he will be pater. Why? My timer. But idna da'afka lebasraisa, chasra le shi'ura dekamaisa. Because at the end of the day, at the time that he wrote down the first letter was already deficient. What does this mean? Look at Rashi. Chaser shir dekamaisa, kishemis yafsha nechser hashir, ulechigamra hotza deba'ina litzarfa, ein kan shir beiz yosa. So this is very interesting. The assumption is that wet ink has a larger volume than dried ink. So by the time ultimately, so therefore we'll say what happened in this case over here. Reuven took out the ink for letter number one. So he took it out, wrote it down. Then he went back, got the ink for letter number two, took it out, wrote it down. The Gemara assumes that by the time he wrote down letter number two, the shear for letter number one had already diminished, and therefore he lacked the requisite shear for liability. Okay, obviously it goes without saying, in all of these cases, even if there's no liability, ultimately, again, the act is us. So when we say that there's no liability, that might mean biblical liability. But Lamaisa, again, what he's doing is certainly still going to be us in midirabanan. V'am Rava, hotzi chatzi gro geres achos v'enicha, v'chazir v'hotzi chatzi gro geres achos v'enicha. Let's listen to this next case. Rava says as follows. What happens if a person, and I will say normally the shear for food is a grogeres, right? If you go ahead and you transport ochlim, you transport food, and the volume of the food for which you are liable for transporting is the volume of a dried fig. That's the shear most times for food. So what happens if a person takes out a half a grogeres, right? A half a dried fig, and he puts it down, and then he goes back and he goes and he retrieves the other half a dried fig and brings it out. So we'll say, so in this case over here, let's just imagine for a moment, just to keep things simple, that what he's actually transporting is a dried fig. So he cuts the dried fig in half. He takes out half A, right? So we'll say, so imagine that the fig is sitting in Reuven's house. Reuven takes out half a fig, takes it out to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, goes back and gets the other half a fig and transports it out to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. What's the halacha? So Chaziras v'nicha rishona naasis kemisha kalta kelev oshenisrafa upater. So we'll say in this case, by the time he brings out the second half grogeres, the second half of fig, we view the first half as if it's been destroyed. Literally, again, as if a dog came along and ate it, or as if it burned up in the fire. So the Gemara essentially says, halacha lamaisa, we view the first half as if it's non-existent by the time the second half comes out. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Va'amai, hamancha. So ultimately, why would I do that? I will say, at the end of the day, remember, all of this is happening in one lapse of awareness, right? Reuven is going ahead and taking out half A, right? The first half. And then in the same lapse of awareness, he's bringing out the second half. It just happens to be that he's bringing out the two halves. Instead of bringing them out as a whole, he's bringing them out in two different acts. But again, it's two acts happening in the same lapse. So if it's the same lapse, at the end of the day, why don't the two halves combine to form the shear of Chiv? To which the Gemara Tzachi comes, this is what it means to say, Vim kadam v'gbiya rishona, kodem hanachas shnia, what it means to say is as follows. If halacha l'maisa, Reuven brought out the first half, and then before he brought out the second half, he went back and picked up the second half, the first half, Im kadam v'gbiya rishona, kodem hanachas shnia, nasis rishona, kemisha niklata, upater. So we'll say what it means to say is as follows. In Achinami, if you bring out two halves, so remember again, you have a dried fig. That is the shear for Otsa. You bring out one half, and then you bring out the second half. But you bring out both of those halves in the same lapse of awareness. Now it's two different acts of transport, but in the same lapse. In Achinami, if half number one is there at the time that half number two is brought out, they will be mitzdalef. They will be combined, and one will be chayiv. If, however, one brought out half number one, right, and put down half number one, right, the first half, and then before one brought the second half, one went back and picked up and removed the first half, and only then does one bring the second half, then in Achinami, those two halves will not combine to form a shear of chiyuv. Okay, v'merava. Hotzi chatzi grogeres v'henicha. V'chazar v'hotzi chatzi grogeres v'ho'ovira v'evira derech aliyah chayiv. So let's listen to this. Next case. So Rava says, if you brought out the chatzi grogeres, right, you brought out the half a fig and you placed it down, and then you went back and you took out another half a fig, v'ha'avira derech aleh, and you went ahead and you passed the second half over the first half. What's the halacha? Chayiv. So we'll see here this different case. So this case again, remember we'll say, so, you know, sometimes you see these cases and you think to yourself, why? Right? Why would someone do something like this? Well, so remember again, we've been at this long enough to know that we don't ask the whys. A lot of times these cases are created by the Gemara in order to highlight and to really amplify, to really bring out principles. So in this case, something very interesting is happening. I go ahead and I bring out Chatzi Grogeres, the half of the figs volume number one. I put it down. Okay, then I bring out the second one. But what I do is, instead of placing the second one next to the first, I pass the second one over the first. Right? I pass the second one over the first. So what's the halacha in this case? The Gemara says, Chayiv. The Chayiv. But ask the Gemara, Va'amai. Halonach. Again, why should I be Chayiv, Rabose? In this case, what's happened over here? I took out half number one, placed it down. I brought out half number two. And what did I do with half number two? I passed it over half number one. But why should I be chayiv for that? The only time I should be chayiv for half number two is when? Is if I place it down next to half number one. In this case, I took half number two and I literally passed it over half number one. So why should I be chayiv? To which the Gemara said, halonach, never came to rest. Kigon she'evira derech toch shlosha. Oh, what's the case, Rabbi Hussein? I passed half number two within three tfachim of the ground where half number one is situated. So Rabbi Hussein, remember again, we have a concept called lavud. Lavud means that when something is within three tfachim of the ground, it is considered to be at rest on the ground. So what's the case over here? The case over here is I went ahead and I put down half number one on the ground. And then I took half number two, I passed it over half number one, but half number two was passed over within three tefachim of the ground upon which half number one is situated. Well, once you're within three tefachim of the ground where half number one is situated, then guess what? That's called lavud, halacha l'moshe m'sinai. That is considered to be attached to the ground, and therefore it is as if both halves have come to rest in the very same place. Incredible. The Gemara says, va'amar Rava, toch shlosha l'rabbanan tzarech hanocha agabe mashu. But we'll say, even according to the Rabbanan, passing something over within three tefachim of the ground only works if what? Only works if the item comes to rest in some way. Lokasha kan bezorek kan bema'avir. Shabbos said, Rabbanan make the following distinction. If something is thrown through airspace, but it's thrown within three tefachim, that item does not consider it to be as if it came to rest, as if it, unless it literally goes ahead and comes to rest on something. But when you are passing an item through airspace, passing it through within three tefachim of the ground actually allows it to be viewed as if it came to rest. So Rabbi, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is as follows, which is really quite interesting. So Rava says, if you have the following situation, you go ahead and you take out a half a grogeris of an item. Right, so remember again, we'll say just to clarify our facts, the shear of hotza is the volume of a dried fig, a grogeris. In this case, your grogeris, your dried fig, is split into two pieces. You take out half number one, you take it from the Rosh HaSayachid, and you deposit it in the Rosh HaSarabim. Good, but that's only, not good, bad, but that's chazi shir, that's only a half amount. Then what do? In this case, you're taking the other half, and you're literally walking outside with it, and you pass it right over the area where the first half is laying on the ground. So what Rava is highlighting over here is that halacha lamaisa, if you passed that second half within three tefachim of the first half, then halacha lamaisa, you are chayiv. Why? Because Lavud says it is as if that second half has come to rest. Again, when an item is being thrown, it's not viewed as if it came to rest unless it literally comes to rest on something. But when an item is being passed through, carried and passed through, then einachinami, if it comes within three tefachim of the ground, it is considered as if it has come to rest. So when you pass through the second half, or when you carry through the second half within three tefachim of the ground in which the first half is situated, Rava says it is as if you have done a bona fide act of hotzah by carrying out a complete grogeris, a complete volume of a dried fig. Good. Tana Rabbanan. Hotzi chatzi grogeris, v'chazer v'hotzi chatzi grogeris pelam echad chayif. We'll say if you carry out the half a fig and then you carry out the other half in the same lapse of awareness, you will be chayif. B'shteha elamos, however, if you do it in two lapses, pater. Then ultimately, again, you will be pater. So I will say, if you do two half acts in one lapse, you are chayiv. Two lapses, ultimately, again, the half acts are not mitzarif, they do not combine, and therefore one will not be chayiv. Rabbi Yossi says, b'ha'elam echad l'rishus echad chayiv. So Rabbi Yossi says, when do the two half acts combine? Only if halacha lamaisa, both of the half items are being transported into one rishus, right? Into one rishus, into one domain. However, l'shtei rishuyos pater. But if you're transporting it into two different domains, then you will be pater. So we'll say that almost seems to be a bit intuitive. That ultimately, again, if I'm transporting two half dried fig volumes, right? The half a fig. And I transport one half into Rishus A and one half into Rishus B. So what the Gemara suggests, Rabbi Yossi suggesting, is that Allah said they're not mitzarev, they don't combine. The only time two half acts could combine into one act is if A, they happen in the same lapse of awareness, and B, they're both being transported into the same exact domain. Amar Rava. Rava says, however, again, v'hu sheyesh chiyuv chatos beinehem. That is only true when what? That is only true if the Shabbos say, when do we say, this is interesting, when do we say that if the two halves are being transported into two different domains, then halacha lamaisa, they're not mitzarif, they don't combine? That's only if the two domains are separated by a chiyuv chatos, meaning if the two domains themselves are inaccessible to one another on a biblical level. However, aval karmel is low, but if the two domains themselves are not actually separated by a biblical prohibition, let's say they're only separated by a karmelis, which I both say is a rabbinic domain, then ein achinami, the two domains are considered to be one. So let me clarify this again. So essentially what Rav Yossi is saying as follows. Halacha l'maase, if you transport two half shiurim if you transport two half shiurim in two different times, so if they're transported in the same lapse of awareness, they can combine. But that's only true if they're transported into the same domain. If they're transported into two different domains, then the two halves can't combine. But then we further clarify that. What does two domains mean? Two domains mean two different reshuyos that themselves are separated by another biblical domain. That makes them two domains. But if you have two domains that are not separated by a biblical domain, or both say, for example, let's say you have two private domains that are separated by a karmelis. A karmelis is a rabbinic domain. Then ein achinami, for the purposes of Otsa, those two rishos hayachid could be counted as one domain, and the two halves transported to those two rishos hayachid ultimately again would combine. Okay, interesting idea. So Abaye says, no. Afilu karmelis. Even if a karmelis goes ahead and separates them, that's enough to make them into two separate domains. What would be an example, ultimately, again, of where you could have an area that is separated but not two domains? Pisla. For example, if you were to have a very large piece of wood inside one of the domains, so let's say you were to go ahead and transport one half of a grogeres on one side of the piece of wood, the other side of the grogeres on the other side of the piece of wood, even though the domain is split, for Hilchos Shabbos, they are still considered to be one domain, and the two halves therefore would combine into one. The Rava Amar Rava says Afilu Pisla. Rava says even a large piece of wood would split the domain into two domains. Va'azda Rava Litame the Amar Rava Rishus Shabbos Kirishus Gittin Damio. Because we will say Rava says that Shabbos is like Gittin. So I will say a little bit of a crash course on Gittin over here. The halacha is as follows. The Gemara Rashi points out that the Gemara Maseches Gittin says like this. That halacha l'maisa, if a man, let's say, gave his wife a chatzar, gave his wife a courtyard, in order for her to acquire her get. So what's happening over here is, Reuven wants to divorce his wife. So Reuven doesn't want to give her the get himself. So what does he do? He gives her a courtyard. And he says, I'm going to throw the get into the courtyard. And when the get falls into the courtyard, because you own the courtyard, ultimately, again, you'll acquire the get. Okay. Well, let's say, again, in the courtyard is a large piece of wood. And when Reuven throws the get doesn't land in the courtyard. Rather, it lands on a large piece of wood. So we'll say, so the halacha is, she's not divorced. Why? Because we assume that Reuven only rented her the courtyard, did not rent her the domain of the piece of wood. So Rava says, just like a large piece of wood is not considered to be the same domain for Gittin, so too it wouldn't be considered the same domain for Shabbos. So we'll say, so according to Rava, even in the same Rishus, if you were to go ahead and place one half of Kizayis on the ground and another piece of Kizayis on a piece of wood, even though they're in the same domain, they do not combine. Okay. Shabbos say ultimately again. So interestingly enough, the way the Rambam actually accepts this halacha is like Rabbah. Namely that halacha lemaisa, if you transport two halves in one lapse of awareness, they have the ability to combine into one shear, into one amount of chiyuv. But that is only assuming that what? That you've transported them into the same domain. But technically speaking, even if they're in two different reshuyos, as long as there is no biblical reshus in between them, they are considered to be the same domain for the purpose of tziruf, for the purpose of combining for the shear of chiv. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. Kichol, kedei lichol aynachas. Remember again, if a kichol literally again is like is eye makeup. So how much eye makeup are you chayiv for going ahead and transporting on Shabbos? Enough to paint one eye. So if you carry out enough kichol to paint one eye, you'll be chayiv on Shabbos. Ayin achos halokachli. I don't understand. When a woman puts on eye makeup, no woman puts on eye makeup on just one eye. She always goes in and puts on enough for two eyes. So if that's the case, again, one, why would one be chayiv just for carrying out enough makeup for one eye? Amnafuna shekin snuos koklos ayin achos. It's very interesting about say, because apparently the very modest women only would apply eye makeup to one eye. Now, what's the pshat here? Look at Rashi. Tznuos, shaholchos mu'utafos ve'in magalos ela ayin echad, liros v'kochelesos. So we'll say, interestingly enough, so apparently, you know, the mode of dress was very modest women would essentially cover their faces, like a burqa. They would cover their faces, but the only thing they would keep uncovered was one eye. So again, the tznuos used to go ahead and apply eye makeup only to one eye. So therefore, that's the shir. Remember, we'll say, whenever we see God for hotzah, whenever we're trying to figure out how much you have to carry of a particular item in order to be chayiv, so remember, again, we're looking for a unit of chashivos, what is considered to be important. So because, again, the tznuos, so because ultimately the very modest women would only apply eye makeup to one eye. So if you carry out the amount of eye makeup for one eye, you're chayiv on Shabbos. Meisvei Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, kichol, so we'll say, so Rabbi Shimon Elazar says as follows, kichol, and we'll say, interestingly enough, this thing called kichol served a dual purpose. Im l'refuah, sometimes again it was used as like an eye ointment for some type of eye malady, right? It was used like an eye salve. So the Gemara says, im l'refuah, if you're doing it for medicinal purposes, then you're chayiv kedei lichol ayin achas. Then you're chayiv if you carry out enough to apply to one eye. Im l'kashet, and if ultimately again it's the type of kechol that's used for makeup purposes, bebez ein ayin, then you're only chayiv if you carry out enough for two eyes. So you see from here that what? The shear for eye makeup is not one eye. The shear for eye makeup is two eyes. To which the Gemara says, "Tegamahila b'nei Reb Shmuel b'Nachmani kitanya hi be'iranios." Who is that referring to? That's referring to village women, not the village people, but rather again village women. So we'll say, so interestingly enough, so remember again, village women. The Gemara says this is actually quite interesting. So we'll say, People who lived in smaller towns had different standards of tznius. See, apparently, again, in the bigger cities where there was more immorality that happened, the standards of tznius were much stricter. In the smaller villages, where again, there Baruch Hashem, there wasn't as much immorality, there were different standards of tznius. So apparently, again, in larger cities, it was common for a woman to cover her face except for one eye. Therefore, in the larger cities, the shear for kichol was for one eye. In the smaller villages, where again, Baruch Hashem, there was much less immorality, women went around with their face uncovered. So because of that, the shear for eye makeup in the villages was two eyes. Interesting. So we'll say, so again, this goes to the general theme, which is really quite fascinating, which is, you know, even though in halacha in general, whenever we could find objective measurements, that's always what we look for. But interestingly enough, when it comes to these dinim and Shabbos, so this is a din in chashivos, how much of a particular item is considered to be important. And what you begin to see is that halacha lemaisa, importance is very relative. Is very relative. So Allah Chalamayis, again, what's important in the city is different than what's in the village. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. Sorry, let me just shut this off. So the Gemara says, Shaiva, kadei liten apinek evkatan. So remember, wax, enough to go ahead and put on a small opening. Tana, kadei liten apinek evkatan shayayin. So we'll say, how much wax are you chayfe carrying? Enough to plug up the hole, ultimately, again, on a barrel of wine. Devek, kadei litin berosh ha-shafshaf. Glue, enough to, if you carry out, enough to put on the board. So we'll say, what is this talking about? Tana, kadei litin berosh ha-shafshaf, she-berosh kanashal tzayadin. So this is interesting. So apparently, this was a type of Talmudic bird trap. So what would you do? How would they trap birds? They would take a board, and they would go ahead and... They would apply glue on the board. What would then happen? Birds would then come and land on the board and ultimately, again, get stuck on the board. They would get glued to the board. So that's enough glue to apply to the board. So the Gemara says, Zephes v'gafres kedilasos. So we'll say, so remember again, So Zephes and Gafris, so what about pitch, right, and sulfur? Tanika de lasos nekev katan. It was enough ultimately again to make a small hole. So what's moving? We saw in the Mishnah, this is if you had like a bottle or a vial of mercury, so enough to go ahead and create the small hole so that the mercury could come out slowly without dripping out quickly. Charosis kadei lasos pikur. So also when it comes to charosis, clay, enough to go ahead and make the opening pikur. Remember again, was the utensil that was used to keep molten metal, whether it's metal, whether it's gold. So we'll say, so pikor was the opening of this area. So enough clay to make the opening. L'memra, the shir Rabbi Huda nafish. So we'll say, you're telling me then that in the Mishnah, Rabbi Huda shir is larger than the Tanakamo. Ha kamalam the shir Rabbanan nafish. But we generally have thought that in the Mishnah, the shir of the Rabbanan was even more disnan. Rabbi Huda omre kedei litol heimenu midas min alakaton. Ema rather say kedei losud pitput. Kira Kitana, rather say that ultimately, again, it's enough clay to be able to make a tripod for a small stove. Okay? Subin, kede liten api korshel tzarfez av. So we'll say, bran, enough to put on the opening of the cauldron for those who smelt gold on the base. Tanabanan, hamotzi shir kede legaba boazatit, kede lasos pi korshel tzarfez av. So the Braisa says, ultimately, again, how much bran are you chayiv for going in and taking out? Right, the Gemara says over here, subin, right? Enough to go ahead, one who goes ahead and brings out the amount that you need to go ahead and knead, or titis, like mortar. Lasos pikor peitzarf is off. So you're chayiv, if you bring out enough bran, necessary to go ahead and make the mortar in order to fashion the opening of the smelter's cauldron. Okay, sid kedei losud. So we'll say ultimately again, plaster, enough to plaster. Tana kedei losud etzba kitana. So we'll say, see, interestingly enough, this is very interesting. So remember, the Mishnah said, and the Mishnah was a bit ambiguous, how much plaster are you chayiv for taking out? Enough to go ahead and put on the small limb. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Tana kedei losud etzba kitana shebebanos. For Shabbos, you're chayiv if you take out enough plaster for putting on the small finger of a young girl. What does this mean? Amrad Hudomarav, Benos Yisrael Shegila Pirkan, Velohi Gila Shanim. Suppose listen to this. The Gemara goes to the following situation. What happens if you have a girl who exhibits signs of physical maturation? So she's sprouting hair as a sign of physical maturation, but she hasn't yet reached the age of maturation. Suppose this, you have a girl who is maturing physically early, before she reaches the age. And as a result, she's embarrassed. She doesn't want to have this body hair before it's age appropriate for her. So the Gemara discusses the different types of depilatories, of hair removal, that they use specifically for a girl who wanted to remove unwanted body hair. So what would they do? Benos aniim, toflos osan besid. So we'll say, meaning girls from poor families, they used plaster as a depilatory. It's interesting. So apparently plaster is good for hair removal. So they would use plaster. Benos ashirim, rich girls, toflos osan besoles. They would use fine flour. So apparently, again, putting on fine flour also works as a depilatory. Excuse me. Benos malachim, I'm sorry, royalty, toflos osan beshemen hamar. They would use myrrh oil. Again, we'll discuss Shenemar. Shisha chadashim b'shemen hamar. My shemen hamar. We'll say, what is shemen hamar? Rav Huna barchia amar sateches. Okay, it was this type of oil. So they used this sateches, oil shemen hamar, and ultimately, again, it would be able to go ahead and remove hair. So we'll say, so interestingly enough, that's how the Gemara says, when we say enough plaster to put on a small limb, what it's saying is essentially enough plaster to use as a depilatory, so to use as hair removal. Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba Amar, Shemen Zayish Levi Yishlish. Ultimately, again, what's Shemen Amar? It's olive oil from olives that have not yet reached one-third of their maturity. So apparently, again, very high quality olive oil. Time Rabbi Hud Omer, A pinknon, an pikinon, shemen zay shelo hebi yeshlish. And pikinon is Olive oil, shlevi ashlish, means that comes from olives that have not yet reached 1/3 of their maturity. So the Gemara says, v'lama sachin also, why do women specifically use this type of oil? Shemesher es ha-sear, it has the ability to remove unwanted hair. Uma'adin ha-basar, and in general, it makes the skin very soft and radiant. Suppose the Gemara tells a story. Rav Bibi, havile barta, so Rav Bibi had a daughter. And he wanted his daughter to be, you know, very attractive so that she could attract a good marriage partner. So what did he do? Tafla aver aver. Ultimately, again, he had her apply this oil, right? This oil, this olive oil. What the Gemara calls the sateches, or the shemen hamor, or the apikinon, on each limb of her body. Shakal ba dalid meas zuze. As a result, ultimately, again, she was so beautiful that mamish, there were men vying for her hand in marriage, that people were literally offering exorbitant amounts of money, like 400 zuz, to marry her. So what happened? Rabbi Bibi had a neighbor. Hava hahu nachri bishvuuse. Hava de barte. So Rabbi Bibi had a Gentile neighbor who saw what happened. So the guy said, you know what? I want men to want my daughter as much as well. So what did he do? Tafla bechad zimna. He had her apply oil on her body, but all at once. Umesa. And she died. Now apparently Rashi points out, the chaput this oil is, it raises body temperature. So you have to be careful, and therefore to only put it on one limb at a time. Aver, aver. So this non-Jew made a mistake and had his daughter put on the oil all at once. Apparently, again, her body temperature raised to dangerous levels, and she died. Amar, and the guy said, Katu Rabibi Labarti. He said, Rabibi killed my daughter. Now, obviously, I will say Rabibi didn't kill his daughter, but he was very upset, very distressed, because here all he was doing was mimicking that which Rav Bibi did. Yet for Rav Bibi, again, it allowed his daughter, right, to command, right, many, many marriage proposals. And Nebuch, for his daughter, she died. Amra Nachman, Rav Bibi d'shasi sheikh rabayin bansei tafla. I suppose it's very interesting. It says, Rav Nachman says, Rav Bibi, in Rav Bibi's home, they drink beer. So because they drink beer, that's why ultimately, again, his daughter requires olive oil. Anan delo shasinon shikra lo bayin ban santafla. But ultimately, in our home, ultimately, again, where we don't drink beer, halacha lemaaseh, again, we don't have to go ahead and have our daughters engage in this process. Rashi points out, shechar mashchir umar beser. Apparently, again, drinking beer causes excessive hair growth and darkening of hair. Okay, good to know. So Lamaisa again, the Gemara said, Rav Bibi, you only needed to do this because they drink a lot of beer in your home. But if you don't drink a lot of beer in your home, then you don't need this process. Good. The Gemara goes right there. Rav Yehuda Omer Kedei Lasud Kilkul. So ultimately, again, Rav Yehuda said, enough to go ahead and literally shmir kilkul. So then we're gonna see what this means in just a moment. My kilkul, or my andipi. So we'll say, what's the meaning of these terms used in the Mishnah? Amar Rav tzida, ubas tzida. So Rav says it refers ultimately again to the temple and the area right beneath. So we'll remember again, this is still talking about the amount of plaster that you're chayif for carrying out on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yehuda says it's enough to go ahead and put on the kilkul. So the Gemara says, what's kilkul? Andipi. So Rabbi said, the Gemara says, Andipi. My Andipi. Amar Rav Tzida. It refers to the temples. Ubas Tzida. And the area right beneath the temple. So Rabbi said, interestingly enough, they were using plaster, not just for building purposes, but interestingly enough, we're using plaster for some type of depilatories as well. Lememra, the shir Rabbi Huda Nafesh. They tell me that Rabbi Huda's shir is larger than the Rabbanon. Hakheimel, and the shir the Rabbanon Nafesh. Ultimately, again, we established before that the share of the Rabbanon is more. So the Gemara says, how can I the share of the Rabbanon nafish? The Gemara says, we'll say, first white line, pay on the base 80b, zuta mit Rabbanon, v'nafish mit Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Huda's share is less than the Rabbanon's, but ultimately, again, it is more than Rabbi Nechemya. Says the Gemara, Nesvei, Amarav, Nirin Deve Rabbi Huda, Bechavut, V'divrei Rabbi Nechemya bebeitzas hasid. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi says, Rabbi Huda's words seem to be more clear. Bechavut, Rashi says, chavut, sid hanimuach b'mayim harbein du asoy lasid kilko. So Rabbi Huda's shear seems to apply with dissolved plaster or liquid plaster, and Rabbi Nechemya's shear is when you're using a lump of plaster. V'sakadai tchot sidu bas tzida idi v'idi chavut. So I'll say ultimately again, but if you hold that Kilkul ultimately is the temple and the area right beneath the temple, that amount is used ultimately with a lump of plaster, not with liquefied plaster. Ela Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Ami, Andipa. What's Andipa? Rashi says, Andipa, Klicheres, Veloshne Dodin, Achos Lamala, Achos Lamato, Ukisherotze Lamaloso, Sosimes Adada Tachton. So I'll say ultimately again, what does Kilkul refer to? It refers ultimately again to a large barrel with two spigots. And the idea is that when you don't want any liquid to come out, you plug up the spigot. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, what does the Mishnah mean when it says enough plaster to go ahead and put, literally again, for kilkul? Kilkul means enough plaster to plug up the spigot. Maskev l'Rav Kahana, v'chi adam osema osav an paros. So says the Gemara, Rav Kahana says, does a person go ahead and literally cause himself a loss like this? Now the idea over here is, everyone knows that if you plug up the spigot of your barrel with plaster, what happens? Wine eats through plaster. So if you go ahead and you plug up your barrel with plaster, ultimately, again, the wine is going to drip out. Alam Rav Kahana, shnosos. Rather, Rav Kahana says, it's shnosos. Rashi says, simonim kli cheres gadol, yesh bo blitos, blitas kemine gozim kitanim, ad kan l'sa'a, ad kan l'sasayim, v'sadin osabesed. So I'm going to say, rather again, Rav Kahana says, what's kilkul? Kilkul means like this. If you have a measuring utensil, so what you would do is you would put on measurements on the utensil. So what they would do, Rabbi say, is that they would go ahead and put plaster in those areas by the measurements to make the measurements a bit more pronounced. So the Gemara says, Kidisnan, Shnosos Hayubehin, Ad Kan Lapar, Ad Kan La'ayil, Ad Kan La'keves. Because we'll say literally again, they had plaster protrusions, right? Plaster protrusions, marking off the measurements for the karbanos, for the hin. Here's the amount you have to use for a par. Here's the amount you have to use for an ayil. Here's the amount you have to use for a keves. Viboy Seima, my Andipa, what's Andipa? Afusa. It's an afuso. But say, what does that mean? V'chi ha dahu bar galil, di'ikla le'bavel. There was once a certain man from the Galil who went to Babel. Da'amrele kum drash lanu b'maise merkava. And they said to this guy when he came to the Beis Medrash, why don't you teach us about the maise merkava? And I will say, the maise merkava is the esoteric vision of the Navi Yechezkel. Amrelehu edrash lehu. He said, I'll darshan for you, just like Rabbi Nechemya ultimately again went ahead and darshan for his friends. What happened? And the hornet came out of the wall and stung him on his forehead, umis, and he died. And they said he did this to himself. Rabbi said, just nothing to do with this topic, but my simmer kava, the esoteric vision of Yechezkel, is something that we do not speak about or darshan or learn about in public settings. This individual took it upon himself to go ahead and learn about this in a public setting, and as a result, the Gemara says, caused his own death. Now, remember, this has nothing to do with our Gemara except for a definition. The Gemara is suggesting, what's Andipi? Andipi is the forehead. That ultimately, again, how much plaster are you chayiv for transporting out on Shabbos? The enough, ultimately, again, to rub on the forehead. Good. So we'll say the Mishnah goes weiter. Mishnah, so we'll say, still continuing on the same topic of how much do you have to carry out of a particular item in order to be chayiv. Says the Mishnah, Adama kechosim hamartzuf in divrei Rabbi Akiva. So Adama, we'll say, if you carry out earth on Shabbos, how much are you chayiv? So enough to carry out kechosim hamartzufin. Rashi says martzufin. Sokin sha'osin miklipas eitz gadol v'chosin mosal. So we'll say, so as you're going to see, martzufin are large sacks, cargo sacks. cargo sacks that are made from some type of wood. Again, we'll see what they're made in the, we'll see about this in the Gemara. And ultimately, again, you seal it. You seal it with something. So what they would do is they would make a seal made out of earth. So enough earth to create the seal over cargo sacks. That's what you're chayv carrying out on Shabbos. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. No. Enough earth to create a seal for a letter. Zevel v'chol hadak. What about zevel? We'll say is manure or compost, right? Fertilizer or chol hadak, fine sand. How much are you chayv for carrying out on Shabbos? Kedei lezevel kalach shel kruv. Enough to go ahead and fertilize one stalk of cabbage. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Chum dechum say no. Kedei lezevel kresha. Enough to fertilize one leek. Chol hagas. What about thick sand or coarse sand? Kedelitain amale kaf sid. So what's interesting? Coarse sand is enough to place, literally, we'll say, on a trowel of plaster. We'll say, you know, when you take plaster, you still do this today. If you take plaster, so you take plaster on a trowel. Right? I don't know what the right, it's like a flat shovel. I don't know if that's the right thing, right? And you literally, you take a thing, you take an amount of plaster and you smooth it out. That's called a trowel. Learn new things every day. So I'll say, so what they used to do is with plaster, they would mix in coarse sand. That's what you mixed into plaster. So how much coarse sand are you chayv for transporting on Shabbos? Enough that you would put on a trowel of plaster. Kana, what about a reed? Kedei lasos kumus. Enough to go ahead and make a quill. So if you carry out the reed, enough to make a quill, you're chayv on Shabbos. Vim haya ava, but if the quill was if the reed was thick, Omerusas, or it was cracked. So you're going to say, apparently, for a quill, you could only use a thin reed. So if the quill was thick or the quill was cracked, in which case it cannot be used. I'm sorry, if the reed was thick or the reed was cracked, in which case it could not be used for a quill. So how much of that reed, how large of a reed would you be chayv carrying on Shabbos? Kedei levashel bo beitz kalash bebeitim, enough, a large enough reed that could be used as fuel to go ahead and cook an easily cooked egg, trufa, that's already beaten, v'nesuna ala ilfas, and put in the pan. So I'm going to say, if the reed is large enough that could be used for the fuel to go ahead and cook an egg, the type of egg which is easily cooked, that is already cracked, beaten, and put in the pan ready to be cooked. If you carry out the reed that is large enough to cook such an egg, yichayev on Shabbos. Good. Let's go right. This says the Gemara. Al molei kafsid. Remember again, halacha lemaisa for carrying out coarse sand. Right? Al kafsid. So the Gemara says, Tana, kedei litin api kafshal sedar. I'm going to say, how much coarse sand are you chayev for carrying out? Enough to put on a trowel. Right, on a trowel of plaster. So, man tana, duchol ma'ale lesid. Who is the opinion who says that sand is good for plaster? Aranachis Rabbi Hudihi, desanya, lo yasud adam es beso besid, ele imkin eruv bo teven ochol. This is actually very interesting. The aloch is the Braisa says, Zgimar Mesechas Tainis, right? That ultimately what? That a person is, also Babas, the Gemara quotes over here, that a person is not permitted to go ahead and plaster his home with regular plaster. Now, we'll say, this is one of the takonas, one of the enactments Rashi points out. Rashi says, La'achar chor mishma ve'el shushalayim. One of the enactments that was enacted after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed is that you should not plaster your home with white plaster. They had this beautiful white plaster they used to use. So the Gemara says, as one of the signs of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, we don't use this beautiful white luminescent plaster. Rather, what do you have to do with it? Lo yasud adam as beso besid, ele imkein eruv bo tevel ochol. You have to mix in straw or sand into the plaster. What does that do? That apparently diminishes the whiteness of the plaster a little bit. Rabbi Huda says, Tevin Mutter, Rabbi Huda says, you can mix in straw, but you can't mix in sand. Chol aser, mipnei shutrachsid. Ultimately, again, I will say why. Because halacha lemaisa, when you mix in sand with plaster, that actually makes it into trachsid. Trachsid is actually considered to be a better form of plaster. Rashi says trachsid, sid chazak umiskashi yotzer Mishimlo irivo. So I'll say, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can't mix in sand, because even though sand may diminish the color, it ultimately betters the quality of the plaster. So the only thing you could do is mix in straw so as to diminish color and quality. Rava Amar Afil Temer Rabbanan Kilkulo Zehu Tikuno. The Rabbanan say, even nevertheless, even you could still mix in. You could still mix in ultimately again. You could still mix in the sand, because at the end of the day, even though it strengthens the plaster, it diminishes the color. They will say again, so leaving aside the halachas for the churban, ultimately again, what you see from here is that sand is beneficial to plaster. Therefore, halacha lamaisa, the amount of coarse sand that you are chayev for transporting on Shabbos is the amount that you would mix into a trowel's worth of plaster. So, just as an aside, if you look at Rashi's kilkulo zayti, you know, diilav demekalkele umashkiro lo haya mishteri hilchach al kach. So, I'll say. So, the idea over here is, even if you want to say that lamaisa, the mixing in of the sand into the plaster actually benefits the quality of the plaster, halacha lamaisa, the diminishing of the color still takes care of the zecher lechurban idea. So we'll say, or is the halacha of a zecher lechurban is that a person should not use that luminescent form of plaster. So we'll say, this is actually very interesting, because this is all part of the halacha that the Gemara brings down of leaving an amma by amma, right, an unfinished square in your home. So the Gemara brings down that when painting your home, or when plastering your home, you should leave an amma by amma square unfinished, zecher lechurban, to remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Aruch HaShulchan actually discusses this. He says, I don't understand. He says, how come people don't do this today? Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, you see this a lot, that people leave an amma by amma, right? A square, unfinished. Usually, again, right when you walk into the home, you leave it unfinished. But the Aruch HaShulchan points out, he says, in Chuzars, outside of Eretz Yisrael, rarely do you see people doing this. So he says, why not? Remember again, this is not a halacha that's unique to Eretz Yisrael. If it's not unique to Eretz Yisrael, so why don't we do it in Chuzar? So interestingly enough, Aruch HaShulchan says, he posits that this halacha of leaving in one amma by one amma square unpainted was a din in this special type of bright white plaster. He says that's when there was an obligation to leave a square unfinished, only with this beautiful white type of plaster. He says today, we don't have this type of white plaster, or even if you do, people very often don't use it in their homes. He said, because of that, that's why people don't usually use leave the one amma by one amma square unfinished. So it's very interesting. See, links the two. The leaving the square unfinished was dafka adin in the beautiful white luminescent plaster. But because we don't usually use that for our building materials today, therefore the one amma by one amma square, the Aruch HaShulchan posits, does not apply. We'll say, just as an aside, you could fulfill this halacha in a lot of different ways. The Aruch HaShulchan brings down anything you do zeicha l'churban. So for example, if you have a square in your home, or you have a picture, meshkachei Yerushalayim tishkach yimini, something that reminds you of the churban, you could fulfill the amma by amma obligation in your home like that as well. Okay, let's finish. V'mhaya ava. I'm sorry. Kana kedei lasos komos. So a reed, your chayev, if you carry out the reed that is large enough, ultimately again, to go ahead and make a quilt. Tana komos hamagia lekishrei esbaosav. It has to be a quilt that is large enough to get to the joints of your finger. By Rav Ashi, kesha alon and kesha tachton, is that the upper joint to the lower joint, or is which joint to the finger is that referring to? Teku, we're not sure. So we know that the quill has to be a certain size, but apparently not immediately sure which size. And ultimately, again, if it was thick. So remember again, if it's so thick or if it's cracked that it can't be used as a quill, so it has to be large enough to what? To serve as the fuel to cook an egg that is easily cooked, that is already cracked, that is already beaten, and that is already in the pan. So says the Gemara, Tana Trufa B'Shemen Unasina Be'Elfas. So the quill has to be the type large enough to serve as a heat source to cook up an egg that is already beaten, already mixed with oil, and put in the frying pan. Amar le Mar Berei Dravina Lebrei, Mishmi Alecha Beitza Kala Mahi. When the Mishnah says an easily cooked egg, what kind of egg is that? What kind of egg are we referring to? Amrle bi asad that siltsala. Biasa de Tzotzala. Rashi says, it's the egg of a small bird. Apparently, again, the egg of a small bird has the ability, is cooked easier. Or I should say, it's cooked faster. So my time, Mamishum de Zutra, because it's small, because the egg is small, the bird is small, therefore it's easily cooked. Ema Tzifirta. So maybe it refers ultimately, again, to a Tzifirta. Tzifirta literally means like a hummingbird. Ishtik. Amrale midishmir lechabaha. Did you hear anything about this? Amrale haki amrav sheshes beitzas tarnagolas. In fact, it's actually referring to a chicken's egg. Chicken's egg apparently again is an egg that is most easily cooked. Oh my, karule beitzakala. So ultimately, again, why do we call this an easily cooked egg? Shiru chacham, because the rabbi said ein lecha beitzakala levashel yotzer mibeitzas tarnagolas. Apparently, again, it was said of all eggs, the egg that cooks easiest, quote-unquote, the egg that cooks fastest is going to be a chicken's egg. Umayshna koshi uri shabbos kigrogeres v'hacha kibetza. So we'll say, why is it that in general, so ultimately, again, the shear for all other food items is always a dried fig. As we said before, it's always a dried fig. And yet here, ultimately, again, it is going to be an egg's worth. Right? Remember, again, Abbas, you're telling me that the shear for carrying a reed on Shabbos, which is a large reed or a cracked reed, which cannot be used for a quill, is a reed that ultimately, again, is the size that could serve as fuel to cook up a chicken's egg that is already cracked, mixed with oil, and put in the frying pan. So Allah says again, why by all other food items, the shear is a grogeres, the shear is a fig. And yet here you're telling me that the shear is an egg. What's the pshat? Amar lehachi amar Rav Nachman, ki grogeres mi beit sakala. Ah, now what it means is, you don't even have to be able to cook the whole egg. What do you need to be able to do? You need to be able to cook the dried fig's volume of an egg. So I'll say, interestingly, that's what it turns out is that halacha l'maisa. So I'll say, here is Hilchos reeds, right? So halacha is, if a reed is usable for a quill, so if it's the type of reed that can be used for a quill and it reaches the joint of the finger, we're not sure which joint of the finger, then if you carry out a reed that size, you are chayiv. What happens if the reed cannot be used as a quill? Then you're only chayiv if you carry a reed that is large enough to serve as fuel to cook a chicken's egg that is cracked, mixed with oil in the frying pan. And you don't have to cook the whole egg. You just have to be able to cook a dried fig's volume of that egg. So we'll stop over here. So I want to point out, you know, we hear this and we say, that makes absolutely no sense. And so what's the shear? So obviously you have to understand something. When Chazal said these shiurim, that's because these shiurim were things that people understood and made sense. This was the vernacular. So when you told someone that on Shabbos, you're chayiv, if you carry a reed of the size that's large enough to go ahead and cook a chicken's egg that's cracked, that's in the pan with oil, and not even the full egg, but only a dry diamond, so you would say to someone, they would say, okay. Now I understand. So for us, we're obviously removed. So these shiurim are not the vernacular for us. But just so you understand, the way Chazal created the shiurim was a way that common people would understand. So for the common individual, giving this shiur was a way for them to remember ultimately, again, the shiur for carrying the reed on Shabbos. So we'll say, Yashar Koyach, we'll stop over here for today. Meretz Hashem, we'll pick up at the Mishnah. And Meretz Hashem, tomorrow back to our regular schedule. 5:45 a.m. Tzidkas HaTzadik. 5:55 a.m. Daf Yomi. Yashar Koach, wishing everyone a wonderful and enjoyable day. Shkoyach, everyone.
Thank you.
Of course.